there in here.
Hey, Juliet, he's off listening to Historical Hystericals. Hi, everybody. Yes, we're back once again. Hi, everybody, and welcome again to another episode of Historical Hystericals, having a look back at the famous people in history that have made us laugh through the years. I'm Chris Brennan.
And I'm Commander Mike.
And today, well, who are we going to have a look at today, Mike?
Oh, the great Mel Brooks.
Oh, yes. Mel Brooks, movies like The Producers, The Silent Film. What else?
Young Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah, Blazing Saddles.
Spaceballs. Including the animated series of Spaceballs.
There's an animated series of Spaceballs?
We'll get to that later on. I've been wanting to do an episode on Mel Brooks since we raised the idea of doing the podcast, so this is going to be great.
I'm so glad you said do an episode on Mel Brooks rather than just doing Mel Brooks.
Yes, no one wants to do that.
No. Well, they're in bankrupt mode, but, you know.
Okay, so let's a bit of housekeeping first. We'll talk about contact details. If you'd like to contact Chris or myself, you can do that on Facebook. You can look up the Historical Hystericals Facebook page. Just do a search for Historical Hystericals. Easy.
It's easy. You'll find us there.
You can also do the email thing with
CommanderMike356@yahoo.com.au.
Okay, let's talk about our friend Mel Brooks.
Yes, the mighty Mel Brooks. Now, Mel was born Melvin Kaminsky. Who would have thought Kaminsky?
Yeah, Jewish, who would have thought, huh?
Yeah, who would have thunk he was Jewish, yeah. That was in New York on the 28th of June, 1926. Son of Kate, a garment worker, and Maximilian Kaminsky. Oh, that's where he gets the name from, of course. His dad, Maximilian, was a process server.
Now, his Brooks and his family and his maternal grandparents, his mum's parents, immigrated from outside Kiev in the Russian Empire. Father's family from Danzig in the German Empire, which is now in Poland. Uh-huh. Now, his father died of kidney disease at age 34.
Wow, that's young, isn't it?
Mm.
Wow.
So as a child, Mel Brooks was a small and very sickly boy himself. He was bullied and picked on by his classmates. He took on the comically aggressive job of tumbler in various Catskill resorts. Now, tumbler is the master entertainer. In vaudeville, they were referred to as top bananas. So he was just the comedian entertainer at the Catskill resorts. This is an area in America where the Jewish people would go for holidays, a holiday resort area.
Basically a bit of a buffoon.
Yeah. So this overcome his shyness and the bullying and name-calling.
Mel, of course, went on to become a corporal in the U.S. Army, and he graduated from the Virginian Military Institute and served in World War II. He fought at the Battle of the Bulge, and on occasion, he defused landmines.
Now, being Mel Brooks, you know he snuck up behind people and said, bang.
Yeah. I could just see Mel out in the middle of a minefield with a paper bag creeping up behind somebody.
There was a very good interview he did with Michael Parkinson, where he's talking about his army experience. He and his friends went out on patrol, his platoon, and they were bored, out of their brains. Nothing was happening. So they thought they'd take target practice on the top of these telegraph poles were these ceramic separators that stopped the lines from being earthed.
Yeah.
So him and his mates would start shooting at these ceramic separators just for fun. When they got back to the base, there's pandemonium. There's all sorts of things going. There's, what's up? What's up? The Germans are close by. They've taken out our communications. We need to find them. So Mel immediately turned around and said, we volunteer to go out and look for them, and took his platoon out again.
Oh, dear. Which sort of goes along with the old saying, if you make a mistake, cover it up before anybody else finds out.
Absolutely. So after his army experiences, Mel went into show business as a stand-up comic, telling jokes and doing movie star impersonations. He worked behind the scenes, becoming a comedy writer for television, and he joined the hit series Your Show of Show with Sid Caesar. Now, this was an incredible experience for him, because not only was Mel working on this show, some of the other writers were Larry Gelbert, who went on to write for many comedy shows and films like Tootsie, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, the TV series MASH, And in 1981, he even contributed to the Australian TV series Neighbours.
Ah, so his career took a downturn.
There was also Danny and Neil Simon. They were two brothers, but Neil went on to write some of the best plays ever written for Broadway. So he did plays like The Odd Couple, Squeak Charity, The Goodbye Girl, They're Playing Our Song, Bloxy Blues, The Out of Towners. He also contributed to the screenplays of many of his own Broadway plays. So he's a very successful writer himself.
It always amazes me where you come up with all these facts. It's just, all at your fingertips.
This is the stuff I love, I tell you. Woody Allen.
Now, he also worked with Woody Allen at that stage, didn't he?
Yes, Woody Allen was also a writer for them. They were saying that if they wanted something mad and ridiculous, they'd go to Mel Brooks. If they wanted something that was funny but made sense, they went to Neil Simon. Don't know what Woody Allen contributed.
Guys dressed in white suits jumping out of aeroplanes.
Yes, pretending to be sperm. That was a weird...
Yes.
Let's move on. Also on the writing team was one guy called Carl Reiner.
Now there's a famous name.
He is indeed, for so many reasons. Now, he later on became the creator of the Dick Van Dyke Show, and he's always said that he based Maury Amsterdam's character of Buddy Sorrell on Mel Brooks.
There you go.
So, around about the 1960, Brooks teamed up with Carl Reiner as a comedy duo on the Steve Allen Show. Now, their performances led to a series of comedy albums that included a routine that eventually expanded into the 2,000-year-old Man series. That generated 5 albums and, in 1975, animated TV special.
Sorry, they did an animated TV special of the 2,000-year-old Man?
Yes. It was great. The 2,000-year-old Man arrives in an airport, big press push, and a very cartoony Carl Reiner comes up and interviews him.
Okay. I'm going to have to do a YouTube search on that one. See if I can find
it. Yes. I love YouTube. You can find some great stuff up there, including these 1975 animated special 2,000-year-old Man. Look it up.
Right. Now, Mel Brooks later moved on, of course, to working in films. Now, he worked as an actor, a director, a writer, and a producer. Brooks' first film was The Critic, and that was 1963. An animated satire of arty cinema. It was conceived by Brooks and directed by Ernest Pintoff. In that one, Brooks supplied the running commentary as the baffled moviegoer trying to make sense of obscure visuals. So he was the critic for the movies. The short film won an Academy Award. Then Mel Brooks moved on to work with Buck Henry. Now, you'll know that one from the TV series Get Smart with Don Adams.
And occasionally appeared in small roles.
Hmm.
That's something to dig out the DVD collection to see if you can spot Mel in the... you'd have one or two lines, that's all. But it's always fun to watch that. Brooks then went on to make his first feature film, The Producers. This was a dark comedy about two theatrical partners who deliberately contrived to make the worst possible Broadway show.
Recently redone with Matthew Broderick and...
Nathan Lane as a...
Nathan Lane.
As a Broadway show and a movie. But we'll get on to that later.
Yeah, that's been running for a long time on Broadway too.
Yeah, it was great. It was so out there. You've got to remember, this is 1960s, which is only 20 years since the war, so... Poking fun at Hitler is still a bit raw for a lot of people. Its big production number was, of course, the famous Springtime for Hitler. And this made major studios not want to touch it. Mel Brooks finally found an independent distributor and released it as an art film.
Yeah, like our art festivals, like the comedy festival and things like that.
Yeah. Now, it actually won the Oscar for Best Original Screenplay. First film out, he gets himself an Oscar for Best Original Screenplay. Way to go, Mel.
Now, an interesting thing about that, like Springtime for Hitler, everybody loves Springtime for Hitler, and there's so many songs that pop up in the Mel Brooks films, but Mel actually can't read music.
Not a bit of it.
Not a bit of music. He hums the songs into a tape recorder and then hands it over to somebody else who transcribes it into actual music. So
not bad when you consider he's done films like this and all the music in his films come from him as well as 2 major Broadway musicals that he's done this with music.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's funny. So anybody out there that's said, oh, I'd love to be a musician, but I can't read music. Look at Mel Brooks. I mean, come on. If a short, dumpy Jewish guy can do it, anybody can.
Why not? The producers, when it went to Broadway, got a record-breaking 12 Tony Awards.
That's staggering, isn't it?
Massive, more than anyone else. Who was the previous? I used to know who the previous Tony Award winner was. South Pacific, I think. Don't hold me on that one, but yes. Okay. Mel said that he based the lead character of Bialystok on an old producer he used to know. He would actually go out and seduce little old ladies and get checks from them for the next show he's producing. The show is usually called Cash.
Now, Franz Liebekind, who was one of the lead characters in The Producers, Dustin Hoffman was actually up for the role in that film.
The mad German playwright played by Dustin Hoffman. Oh, what a different film that would have been.
That would have been completely weird, but he turned it down because he got the part in The Graduate. Probably not a bad move by Dustin, but yeah. Oh, dear.
I love the fact that Dustin Hoffman was all set to go in The Producers, and Mel only allowed Dustin to go off and audition for the film The Graduate because his wife Anne Bancroft was in it. Now, Mel was familiar enough with the role of Benjamin to know that Dustin Hoffman was utterly wrong for it and would never be cast. They rewrote it for Dustin, so I said, okay. Oh, the other famous thing about The Producers' film? It may contain the very first use of the term creative accounting.
Which has become such a staple in our life these days, isn't it?
Yes, haven't we all said it? Now, the great thing, another great story about Mel having trouble getting this released was the involvement of Peter Sellers, the English actor, was actually making a movie in Hollywood. I'm just looking up the name of the movie. I Love You, Alice B. Toklas. Alice B. Toklas, 1960. Right. I've never heard of that film.
No, it's not one I'd know.
But while Peter Sellers was in Hollywood filming this, he liked to have films screened, private screenings, for himself and his friends just for their own entertainment at nights. So one of the films he screened was The Producers. Peter Sellers loved it. Now, when he heard it would not be released, he began calling the head of the studios and convinced him to release it. The only compromise being that the title of the film had to be changed from Springtime for Hitler to The Producers.
Aha, there you go. Well, it's kind of funny how, like, everybody knows The Producers as The Producers, you know. I mean, if it had come out as Springtime for Hitler, would it have been such a smash hit? You don't know.
Yeah, never know. The thing is, it's so instrumental in so many careers. I mean, it set Mel up beautifully. But also a young actor called Gene Wilder was also involved in this. He was very much a struggling actor at the time. You know, in a recent interview, he was saying that he, for the first reading of the script, halfway through, he had to excuse himself to head off to a dentist appointment that he couldn't miss. Well, actually, he was going off to the unemployment office to collect a check for $55 that he desperately needed at the time.
And this is, of course, that's the first release of the film, which was back in 1960.
68, yep.
Don't get it confused with 68. Don't get it confused with the current release, whatever you do, people.
No, we'll come on to that later, the new musical version of The Producers, which is an amazing story in itself. Okay, so that was 68. Mel's next release was in 1974.
He waited a while, didn't he?
Yes, but, oh, was it worth waiting for?
Blazing Saddles.
It is an absolute classic.
You got to love that. Yeah, the Waco Kid and the Sheriff. And,
Black Bart,
yeah. My favorite is the guy, I mean, animal rights are going to scream everywhere, but the guy when he punches out the horse, that just, gets me.
Well, there's a wonderful story about that.
It was a stunt horse.
The scene where he punches out the horse was based on Sid Caesar. Remember, he wrote for Sid Caesar's Show of Shows. Now, Sid Caesar himself was a physically imposing man and is reported to be somewhat of a violent man, so he would lash out at very little. In 1982, he wrote an autobiography called Where Have I Been? And he is saying that while trail riding with his wife, her horse caused all sorts of troubles, and he was so angry he punched the horse between the eyes. The horse collapsed unconscious. And Mel says that story was the inspiration for punching out the horse in Blazing Saddles.
Okay.
They tell Mel a story. Years later, he'll use it again in a joke. I love another great story about Blazing Saddles. They were filming in the Warner Brothers studios. They're sitting in the commissary, which is their canteen, and Mel Brooks and the other writers were seated at one table opposite John Wayne. Now, John Wayne turned to them and said, I've heard you're making a Western where people actually say stuff like, blow it out your ass. Now, Mel handed John Wayne a copy of the script and said, yes, and we'd like you to be in it. Now, according to Mel Brooks in a later interview, John Wayne turned down the offer the next day, but he did say, no, I can't do a movie like that, but I'll be the first in line to see it. Can you imagine if John Wayne was in it? That would have been mad.
What character would John Wayne have played, though?
Oh, it'd have to be the Waco Kid. An old gunman that's lot past his prime.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, how about some more beans, Mr. Tagney? Oh, thank you. Pilgrims love right on. Oh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, how different the film would have been, eh?
Oh, dear, dear, dear. Now, there was a guy by the name of Gig Young who was up for the role of the Waco. He was in things like Strange Bedfellows, Invisible Diplomats, not a lot of really big movies that you would have heard of. He did The Red Skelton Show, another one called Sherlock Holmes in New York, which was a TV series.
And interestingly enough, when I was doing research for this, I tried to find photos of Gig Young. I could only find a very bad photo, which is almost profile, at an Academy Awards ceremony. I couldn't find anything else online.
Yeah, and there could be a reason for that. They went to shoot the scene with the Waco Kid drunk, hanging out of the bed, you know, as Bart comes in asking if Waco Kid saying, hey, you're black, you know. But they found out that Gig actually was an alcoholic and he had a big drinking problem. And he was on the set drunk as a skunk and trying to remember lines and, yeah, just not really getting the hang of it. So he underwent a bit of a collapse on the set, and Mel had to shut down production for a day. They flew Gene Wilder across the country to throw him into the role of the Waco Kid. Interesting enough, Young later on sued Warner for breach of contract. How do you get that?
Oh, in America, the Litigation Society.
Oh, crikey Moses. Yeah, so he shows up drunk on set, ruins a day's shoot, then goes around to sue the company. Well done.
Only in America.
Yes.
Speaking about famous names involved in the show, Frankie Lane is a great singer. He's done a lot of Western theme songs. So Mel advertised in show business trade papers for a Frankie Lane type voice to sing the film theme song. Now, he was hoping for a good impersonator. Instead, Frankie Lane himself showed up at the offices 2 days later, ready to do the job. Now, he went in there and started singing with the conviction and the passion that he's famous for. And go back, look at the film, listen to the opening theme song. And everyone in the studio with Mel saying, he doesn't know it's a parody. And Mel saying, shut up, don't tell him. This is brilliant. This is just what I want.
Oh, you're going to love it. Now, interesting thing, going back to the producers again, I'm going to jump all over the place here. In Blazing Saddles, where Lily Von Trapp is sitting there and she's doing her stage show, right at the start, the tune being played on the honky-tonk piano is Springtime for Hitler.
From the producers, yeah.
Have a listen. You'll hear it when you go, oh, my God, yeah. It doesn't dawn on you unless you know it. And then you watch the show again, you go, oh, my God, yeah. That's, yeah.
I love
unbelievable
it.
Stuff.
Love it, love it. Oh, here's another one. Someone else that didn't quite make it into the film. There's weird casting. James Earl Jones playing the part of Bart.
Oh, wow. That would have been interesting.
That would have been a very different performance.
Walks into the cell with a Waco Kid and goes, I am not your father. something else, little-known fact from Blazing Saddles, is that it actually became a spin-off television series.
Yes.
Never actually made it to air, but the TV series was called Black Bart and starred Louis Gossett Jr.
Very interesting casting.
Yeah. The original pilot is found on the 30th anniversary special edition DVD for Blazing Saddles. So have a look at it. If you've got the 30th anniversary, go out and grab it, throw it in, you'll find the pilot for the TV series. Just staggers you, doesn't it?
Incredible. Actually, Blazing Saddles was released twice.
Yes.
In 1974 and again in summer of 1975. Mel says because Warner Brothers had nothing else to put up, so they re-released Blazing Saddles again.
Oh, dear. Now, the thing that always gets me about Blazing Saddles is the campfire scene, all the guys sitting around, hoeing into the beans, you know. Lovely scene.
Incredible. Actually, this is the...
Don't call me Ashley.
This is the first time the sound of farting has ever been used in film. This is according to the filmmakers and the DVD commentary, anyway, that Mel came up with the idea after watching numerous old westerns where cowboys only consumed black coffee and plates of beans. He concluded that such a food combination would inevitably lead to farting.
That's why the song Home on the Range come from, you know, because you're all alone on the range.
It's a reason. But all the noises were actually generated by Mel and a production assistant who put soapy hands under their armpits and squeezed.
You've spoiled the magic for me now. I thought it was actually the guys lifting the cheek.
Actually, I'm very relieved at that information.
Imagine trying to do a retake. Hang on, I've got some more beans, sorry.
Actually, one of the co-writers of Blazing Saddles was Richard Pryor, famous comedian. A few others as well. Apparently, Mel wanted to recreate the camaraderie and the feeling around the writing studio around the Sid Caesar Show for Shows era. So he brought in a writing team and worked collaboratively with them.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, we could talk about Blazing Saddles forever. There's so much stuff, like Madeline Kahn being up for the role of Mame and all the rest of that stuff that we could go. But let's move on. 1974. Yes.
1974 was also the release of Young Frankenstein.
Wow, what knockers.
Exactly. Now, the story goes that Gene Wilder, while making Blazing Saddles, came in at the last minute and did it as a favour to Mel. But he said, the next film will be one that I want to do, my idea. And he came up with Young Frankenstein, which he co-wrote with Mel and produced. So it was great. Now, interestingly enough, the film was shot with many of the same props and lab equipment that was used in the original 1931 film.
The things that Hollywood just hold on to.
Now, when Mel was preparing for Young Frankenstein, he found that Ken Strickfaden, who had made the elaborate electrical machinery for the lab sequences in the original Universal film, was still alive and living in Los Angeles. He went and visited him and found that he'd saved all the equipment and had it stored in his garage.
Oh, my guy must have had a big garage.
Oh, and Mel must have been thrilled because he made a deal to rent the equipment for his film and gave Strickfaden the screen credit he so deserved but didn't get in the original film.
Good on you, Mel. Well done.
Ah,
now, but Mel actually threw a lot of his own sound effects into this film as well, because Mel does the sound of the howling wolf at the start.
Yep.
That's all Mel Brooks. He also does a scream at one stage, which is when Gene Wilder throws a dart at the camera or towards the camera.
Oh, the cat scream.
The cat scream. Mel Brooks does the cat scream.
Yes, and there was an ad lib. Watch very carefully the look on Gene Wilder's face. It is brilliant. It's superb. Just what the role needed, but he wasn't expecting it.
You got to love it when you're working with someone like Mel and they throw in these little ad-libs, and you can see it in the actor's faces, as you say. Like, all of his films, you'll see every now and then the actor just gives this funny sort of sideways glance, and that's because Mel's done something completely unexpected just off camera.
How much fun would it be to work on a film like that?
Yes.
The cast, and especially Mel, were having so much fun, and they were upset when the principal photography was finished. So Mel added scenes to continue shooting. It's nice when you produce your own stuff.
The original cut of the film was actually twice as long as the final cut, and it was considered to be a little bit too long, as you would imagine, so it was cut down. It was only after a marathon cutting session that they produced the final cut of the film. I mean, you've got to take something from 4 hours and cut it down to 2 hours. I want to see the offcuts.
Even that would be good, I think. Now, there's that wonderful scene, putting on the Ritz, doing the musical number.
On the Ritz!
That's the one. Now, Gene Wilder conceived it, and Mel was not keen. But they said, let's just film it and see what happens. It was only when Mel took it to preview screenings and saw the audience howling with laughter, they thought, yeah, this will work. Now, they never knew what sort of noise the monster was going to make. And the noise that came out that you just so wonderfully impersonated was an ad lib by Peter Boyle.
And Peter Boyle was the monster.
Yeah. And he later became famous as the father-in-law to Raymond in Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh, right. There you go. The blind man's parting line in the movie, I'm going to make espresso, was not in the script and, again, was an ad-lib. See, ad-libs popping up everywhere. Gene Hackman threw that one in during the shooting. Now, Hackman was uncredited when the movie was originally released in theatres. Again, someone who did the work didn't get the credit.
Yeah.
There you go.
But he got credits in the DVD releases, so good on him.
Yeah.
I didn't realise it was Gene Hackman, so I'm going to have to go back and look at that film again because... it has been way too long.
I think we may be responsible for a lot of people going and looking at Mel Brooks films again.
Yes, I'll take responsibility for that. It's a good thing.
Yeah, the line that I love the most is when Igor says, "Walk this way," and off he goes. Now, Mel Brooks thought, nah, that's too corny. Sorry, taking it out. Not going to have it. But the audiences loved it when they saw the initial test footage. And so maybe I'll leave that one in. Thankful he did. Thanks, Mel.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, some very funny stuff.
Again, another Mel Brooks film that we could talk about for years and still not cover half the stuff that we've got to do on it.
Yes.
But we'll keep moving on.
Yep. Look, honestly, if you want more information, I would highly recommend the Internet Movie Database for any of these films. Look under the tab Trivia. Oh, you've got miles of stuff, and it's fascinating to watch. And then you know these things and go back and watch the film again. It's great.
Yeah, IMDb is a fantastic source for all movie information. So if you're ever thinking, oh, what was that movie that guy was in? If you can remember his name or her name or part of the name of the movie, just type it in. It'll drag it up for you. It's just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, one other thing before we move off Young Frankenstein is Marty Feldman's Shifting Hump.
Oh, wonderful lines, yes.
Igor's hump going back and forward. Now, you would have think, oh, classic piece of writing and all that. Again, another ad-lib.
Yes.
Marty just kept on moving the hump from one side to the other. The cast members finally noticed it after all that time. Like, he's, go on, have it on that side, next scene, got it on that side. And nobody noticed. I mean, where was the continuity people back then? But,
I love it.
It just got it added into the script. So these are the things that make these movies what they are, because the ad-libs are there and everybody gets the gag.
Yeah, and it led to one of the funniest lines in the movie as well. You know, I'm a rather good surgeon. I can do something about that hump.
What hump?
It's like, rah!
Yeah. Goes, okay. Wasn't that on the other side before? No. Oh, I'm sure that... Anyway, let's get off... Young Frankenstein.
And this brings us up to 1976.
Oh, yes, 1976.
His next outing would be Silent Movie.
Now, who was the, bit of trivia, the only person to speak a line in the movie Silent Movie?
The last person you'd expect to say a word at all, Marcel Marceau.
Oh, dear. Gotta love it, don't you? Only Mel Brooks would come up with the idea of Marcel Marceau actually speaking a line. But
and basically, it's the first silent comedy in nearly four decades. And Mel did it, and it was hysterical.
Yep. You've got to check. If you haven't seen Silent Movie, check it out. It is brilliant. Yep.
Okay, so that was 1976. 1977, he released an Alfred Hitchcock send-up, High Anxiety. Now, this is the first film to actually be produced by Mel Brooks himself. Okay, in 1975, at the height of his movie career, Mel decided to take on TV. He produced the show When Things Were Rotten, a Robin Hood parody that lasted only 13 episodes.
YouTube.
Now, nearly 20 years later, in 1991, he produced the film Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. This is in response to the Kevin Costner film, and there's another Robin Hood film about the same time. So
Prince of Thieves was the Kevin Costner one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he did Men in Tights.
Yeah, Mel did Men in Tights. Kevin Costner did Prince of Thieves.
Prince of Thieves. Yeah.
And there was another Robin Hood film around the same time, which he also mercilessly sent up. So the film resurrected several pieces of dialogue from the TV series. I love the catchphrase for the film. Robin Hood, men in tights. The legend had it coming. Find out where Robin Hood put his Little John. What made Will Scarlet? And what did Friar Tuck into his tights that made Marion all a quiver? That is brilliant, Mel Brooks.
Oh, dear.
So what can we tell you about Men in Tights? We'll go through this very quickly because we are really going over now. Okay. Patrick Stewart plays King Richard, and he took on a very thick Scottish accent. Now, this is a reference to Sean Connery's performance in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. So some critics found Connery's accent inappropriate for the role since King Richard was English. So Mel said, open season. So the music in Men in Tights is recycled from Jews in Space from History of the World Part 1 back in 1980.
Yeah.
How did we miss that? We missed over.
Where did we go? We lost the History of the World. I mean, we're doing History of Mel Brooks Part 1, and we've lost History of the World Part 1.
But
and
look,
Spaceballs.
And Spaceballs 2, yeah. See, shoot the researchers.
You're dead, Mike.
Yeah. All we can say is go out and grab some of these wonderful films from Mel Brooks' career. Let's see what's happened more recently. In 1980, Mel became interested in producing dramatic films. He had the rights to The Elephant Man by David Lynch. Now, he knew that anyone seeing a poster reading Mel Brooks presents The Elephant Man, they'd expect a comedy. So he set up the company Brooks Films. Now, this company has since produced a number of non-comedy films. Let's see, The Fly, Francis, 84 Channing Cross Road, starring Anthony Hopkins, good film, and a few comedies, including Richard Benjamin's My Favourite Year. That is a great film, just quietly. Now, Mel wanted to purchase the rights to 84 Channing Cross Road for his wife, Anne Bancroft, for many years. Now, he eventually successfully obtained the rights to the movie and presented them to her as an anniversary gift.
Oh. Here, darling, here's a horror story for you. 1980 also saw Brooks produce and direct only two films, the first being The History of the World Part 1, 1981, which was a tongue-in-cheek look at human culture from the dawn of man right up to the French Revolution. Now, funny story about the name of this movie, Mike.
Yes.
You told it so well.
He was walking through the car park at the studio, and someone yelled, "Hey, Mel, what are you going to make next? What's your next film?" And he came back with The History of the World. And he said, "Well, it's a big subject, isn't it?" Said, "Well, it's going to be part one." And from that joke, he developed the film.
And we never ever got to see part two, did we?
No. But I'm willing to see anything Mel does now.
Yeah, well, the 1980s also saw his second release movie in 1987, Spaceballs.
Yes.
It was a parody of science fiction films, but mainly it picked on Star Wars.
And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love it. Especially some of the lines they come up with, like, "I see your Schwartz is as big as mine." And
I say, moving up to 1983, a remake of the old movie To Be or Not To Be. Now,
yes, he had some highly controversial bits and pieces in there, didn't he?
Oh, yes. Most notably, the song The Hitler Rap.
Yeah, satirising German society in the 1940s with Mel Brooks playing Hitler. Now, it always gets me how, knowing the background and everything of the Jewish and the German people in World War II and all that sort of really heavy, deep stuff, why would someone from a Jewish background want to play Hitler?
Because he
can. So he can take the piss out of him.
Absolutely.
It was
brilliant. And Mel has been quoted as saying, "I think I'm the only Jewish person to make a buck out of Hitler."
Yes. Now, the Hitler rap, of course, was banned from radio airplay and television in Germany due to its deliberate, ironic portrayal of the Nazi involvement in World War II.
What a surprise.
Yes, but it was an absolute hit everywhere else. It got to number 12 on the Billboard Top 100 in February of 1984 and number 3 on the Australian Singles Charts.
Incredible.
It's amazing. I was actually doing radio shows down in Gippsland at that time, and the Hitler rap was just requested so often. Everybody wanted to hear the Hitler rap. I probably had to play it at least twice during a shift because it was just getting so many requests.
And rightly so. And the video clip is great.
I love it. Hitler on ice skates.
Now, Mel's most recent success has been
in Bancroft. No.
was transferring the film The Producers to the Broadway stage. Mel's also had a few vocal roles in the animated film Robots, and he also worked on the animated series Spaceballs. Spaceballs, the TV series. Now, this I have found, I didn't know about this at all until I started doing research into Mel. Found it online. These are great little shows.
I'll have to have a look at these because it sounds like it's a good, fun series. So if you didn't know about it, Spaceballs, the animated TV series, get out there, try and find it. Cool stuff.
So, yes, Mel produced The Producers on stage. And now let's see. This makes him one of the few artists who have received an Oscar, an Emmy, Tony, and a Grammy. Now
he's just getting greedy, isn't he?
Yeah. He was awarded.
Next thing you know, he'll be after the Nobel Peace Prize. I don't know.
I'd vote for him. Now, let's see. Mel was awarded his first Grammy Award for the Best Spoken Comedy Album in 1999 for his recording The 2,000-Year-Old Man in the Year 2000 with Carl Reiner. So this was a 1999 album reprising what he'd started back in the 60s with Carl Reiner, and it's a great album. I owned this when it first came out. I went out and got it. It was brilliant.
And he also got two Grammys for in 2002 for the Best Musical Show Album for the soundtrack of The Producers and for the Best Long-Form Music for the DVD recording of The Producers.
Yeah, there's a special recording of The Producers, a musical romp with Mel Brooks. There's a great little special. Saw that.
I don't know. There's something about the words romp with Mel Brooks. Just it's all wrong.
He got his first of his four Emmy Awards back in 1967 for Outstanding Writing Achievement on the Sid Caesar Show of Shows. Went on to win three consecutive Emmys, 1997, 98, and 99, for Outstanding Guest Actor on a Comedy Series. That was his Uncle Phil on Mad About You.
The guy gets around, doesn't he?
Doesn't he?
Now, he also won three Tony Awards in 2001 for his musical work on The Producers. He won Tonys for the Best Musical, Best Original Musical Score, and Best Book of a Musical.
Yeah, of course.
Now, remember, this is a guy that hums songs into a tape recorder.
Love it. He also won a Hugo Award and a Nebula Award for Young Frankenstein.
Now, Hugo's and Nebula's, they're science fiction author awards.
Yes.
In 2005, they had a poll to find out the comedian's comedian. This is the one that all the comedians vote as being the funniest person. He was voted as number 50 of the top 50 comedy acts.
Just got in.
Just scraped in. Yes. Poor old Mel.
Now, the American Film Institute made a list of the funniest American films ever. Blazing Saddles came in at number 6. The Producers came in at number 11. And Young Frankenstein came in at number 13.
History of the World doesn't get a mention.
Well, maybe not in the first 50 or so.
It'd have to be in there somewhere.
Mm.
Now, Brooks, Mel's, of course, married to Anne Bancroft.
Until her recent death, yep.
Until her recent departure, yes. And they've acted together in The Silent Movie and To Be or Not to Be. And Anne popped up in the 1995 film Dracula, Dead and Loving It. If you didn't know that, check it out.
Now, years later, they both appeared as themselves in the fourth season finale of Curb Your Enthusiasm on TV, and that was spoofing the finale of The Producers.
Hang on, if you've got Anne and Mel together, and they're both Brooks, that makes them Brookses, doesn't it?
Or Brooks-I.
Brooks-I. Brooks-E. What's the plural of Brooks? One to think about. Email us if you know the answer.
Or not. Now, reportedly, it was Anne Bancroft that encouraged Mel to change The Producers to Broadway. And now it became an enormous success, did world tours, did productions, came up all over the world. And I actually saw it here in Melbourne. It was hysterical. I saw it twice. It was great.
That was the 12 Tonys that The Producers won. That broke a record that had been held for 37 years by Hello Dolly.
Hello Dolly, not South Pacific. I knew that.
Hello Dolly got 10 Tonys, and the producers came along, scooped the pool with 12. There you go.
And then Mel did something else very unusual. He took the Broadway production, the musical production off Broadway, and made it into a movie.
There
you
go. So,
let's see, it was a movie of a Broadway show that was made of a movie.
Yeah.
Now, in 2006, Mel began composing the score to the Broadway musical adaptation of Young Frankenstein.
Okay.
Now, he said, this is perhaps the best movie he ever made. Now, the world premiere was performed at Seattle's most historic theatre, originally built in as a movie palace, in August 7th, 2007. It opened on Broadway on September 1st, 2007, and it had moderate to poor reviews from critics, but has been touring America ever since.
Well, see, the thing is, that's where you'd be building on the reputation or working on the reputation, because people would go, hey, it's a Mel Brooks show. I've got to go and see it. Yes, and that's, you know, even if it's bad, like, you know, what's an example where someone worked on their reputation? Oh, Star Wars Episode One.
But look, the poor reviews from the critics, the public love it. I even found the official website for Young Frankenstein on Stage. Saw some movie clips that they've posted on it. It looks great. I would love to see this show. It looks brilliant.
And I don't think it'll probably ever come out to Australia, but, well, you never know. Maybe we'll get lucky.
Yes. So what else has been happening? Let's see. You had a radio interview on WABC Radio in New York, and they were talking about the possibilities of turning other works of his into musicals, like Blazing Saddles.
Oh, God.
Blazing Saddles the musical.
I can just see the guy sitting around the campfire trying to fart in tune. That'd be...
Now, they also speculated what show tunes could be incorporated into the theatrical production of Get Smart.
Oh, no.
Initially, okay. it sounds awful, but you think, it is Mel Brooks.
Yeah, well, that's true, yeah. Now, he also did In History of the World, Part 1, where he played King Louis, was it?
Yeah.
He produced a rap song for It's Good to Be the King.
It's Good to Be the King.
Yeah, so we could see the musical version of The History of the World. You never know.
Yeah. Actually, that phrase came up again in Men in Tights when King Richard kisses whoever he kisses and says, it's good to be the king. Go Patrick Stewart.
Oh, I love Patrick Stewart. He's so cool.
Just a couple of months ago, in December 2009, Mel was the recipient, one of five recipients, in the 2009 Kennedy Center Honors at the John F. Kennedy Center for Performing Arts in Washington. Now, during his speech awarding it to Mel Brooks, President Obama mentioned that he went to see Blazing Saddles in 1974 at the age of 10.
Wasn't there a rating restriction on that movie?
Exactly what Mel brought up. He said, how did you get on with the ratings restriction? The president said, I think I had fake ID. Before he said, the statute of limitations has passed.
I don't think they'll impeach him for...
For seeing a Mel Brooks film underage.
Yeah, Mel Brooks film. Oh, dear. So, yeah, there we go. Good old Mel Brooks. Blazing Saddles, Spaceballs.
History of the World, Men in Tights.
Young Frankenstein. The list goes on.
You really, really do yourself a favour. Get out there. Have a look at some of these films at your local video library. Buy them. Unfortunately, they're going out cheap nowadays. They are 30-odd years old. So, yep, you can pick up a bargain.
Have a look, too, for gift boxes of Mel Brooks stuff, because they have multi-packs of Mel Brooks movies that you can get, where you can look four or five movies in the one pack. So have a look for those. They're always good value.
And if you really want some fun, on Blazing Saddles, the audio commentary is very interesting because it's an interview that Mel did just put on. So what he's talking about may not necessarily relate to what you're looking at on the screen. Most of the audio commentaries have people watching the film and talking about what you're looking at. This is just an interview that they've plonked on as an audio commentary. It's fascinating. And you hear some great stories
about
Dick Young.
An interesting thing to do, and I suggest it for everybody when you're looking at any film and you're going back to watch it after a couple of years, jump on IMDb, look up the movie, look up the trivia section, and then watch the film. Read some of the stuff, like in Young Frankenstein, the clock at the beginning chimes 13 times.
All fun
didn't
stuff.
Know that, did you?
Yeah.
The assistant property master, Charles Certain, his name is on one of the brains on the shelves. Little things that give the movie a bit of an extra air to it, you know, just something else to watch. Another one that pops into mind is Blazing Saddles. When Harvey Korman's character goes in to purchase his ticket at the Chinese theatre to go in and see the film.
Oh, yes, I know.
In the background is the poster for Black Bart, which was the original title of Blazing Saddles.
Yes, of course, they were filming that before they've decided on the final name of the film, but they couldn't take it out.
Yeah. I mean, these days they do it all digitally. But just have a look at the trivia section, and there's so much stuff there that you'll see, and you'll go, oh, my God. And then you watch the film, it gives you a whole new appreciation for it. Or you could just be a sad nerd like us and sit and watch movies all the time.
Ah, but when they're Mel Brooks films, who's sad? It's great.
Yeah. So that's it for Mel Brooks for now.
Yes, and I'm looking forward to seeing whatever he can produce in the near future.
I'm sure we're going to see a lot more funny stuff from Mel.
I must see if I can't get some money together, go to America and chase up Young Frankenstein on stage. I would love to see that show. I would love to see that show.
Commander Mike stalks Mel Brooks.
Okie doke. So this has been Historical Hystericals.
Oh, marathon session of Historical Hystericals.
I think we're going to get it under an hour, but we'll see how we go.
Creative editing and all that sort of stuff.
If you want to contact us, you can email CommanderMike356@yahoo.com.au. You can catch up with us on Facebook.
Just jump on Facebook and do a search for Historical Hystericals. That'll take you directly to our page.
Sign us up as friends and you'll be notified whenever anything's happening with the podcast. Or you can download podcasts through iTunes. Once again, get into the iTunes store and do a search for Historical Hystericals.
That is so cool. We get the updates as they come through from iTunes, so I know whenever we've put a podcast up.
For so many reasons.
I'm not dumb.
We got to go.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Until next time, have fun.